yes, good afternoon, good evening, good morning, and it's good to be back. And, well, yeah, welcome to Studio A and Studio B and Studio A simulcast for the first time, Journeys on Studio A. Yeah, this is where it belongs. Yes, indeed. So I'd like to welcome you all, and everybody is very... yes, JP is here, Nighthawk, and I've got a very, very special guest just coming up. Basically, I didn't want to tell anybody about it because, you know, these people always get hacked, so we're just going to just dive straight into it. I really hope that everything's going to be fine. I am currently on a internet dongle, it's called. There's a little box about the size of a cigarette packet that has... that creates a Wi-Fi from 4G. Oh, it's a very magical kind of thing. But who knows? I hope that, you know, let me just check if I'm getting to...
On this journey of discovery.
It hasn't quite finished yet, but... yeah, welcome to... Yeah, I'm on Studio A and Studio B. There we go. Lovely. Okay, well, fantastic to get you all here. Yeah, as I said, I've been offline for 2 weeks... because my broadband, which is connected on a regular telephone landline, is probably one of the oldest in the universe, or at least on this planet. It's about 100 years old. I live in a 300-year-old cottage, for God's sake. So, like, the landline is 100 years old, yeah? And it goes 6 inches under the ground, and it's very easily broken by anything, by lorries, tractors going up and down the track, which happens all the time. So, a couple of weeks ago, my neighbor went to have broadband fitted, and the engineer went away saying, oh, I can't get any broadband. And it turns out I can't get any broadband either now. I've got no broadband. I've got no phone line. But they say it will be fixed on Tuesday. Everything will be fixed on Tuesday. So let's hope. Let's cross our fingers and our toes and all these other things. And so, having given you the lowdown on why my absence is, and I'd like to thank Willow for looking after the station. I also like to publicly thank Colleen Kelly and Michelle Caruso and Dolly Howard and Nancy Hopkins and Walt Silver and Vanessa and Vanessa A.M. Yeah. McCann, Vanessa McCann, that's right. Thank you, all of you, for supporting the station while I've been off. I mean, it was just like, it was as if I'd just disappeared off the planet. And so they have coped marvelously, more than marvelously. They've come up with new creative ideas. Everybody stepped up. You're all fantastic, and I love you all. So with that in mind, I'm going to bring in my very special guest. And we will see... what we will see if he will answer and see what happens. There we go. And so I haven't told anybody about you yet. So I'd like to welcome two journeys on Studio A Revolution Radio and Studio B Revolution Radio, Mr. Sir Lord or just plain old Alex Collier. Good afternoon. How are you?
I'm great, JP. How are you?
I'm very well. All the better. I tell you, as I said, I was having a little chat with Tolek about a couple of hours ago, and he'd just seen you a few days ago in the mountains, and he said how lovely it was to hear you laughing and enjoying yourself and feeling relaxed. So with that in mind, let us continue that vibration. You're very much amongst friends here. So welcome, Alex. How are you?
I'm good, JP. Thank you. And actually, that was towards the end of August. It was the 19th to the 23rd of August. Oh. In Mount Shasta. So it wasn't just a few days ago. It was, but it was a while. But yeah, it was nice. And it was great to feel like I was in a safe space.
Yes.
It really was.
Yeah, and so were you staying with communities, Alex? Were you staying like in like regular people's houses?
Yes, someone had offered. They had some spare bedrooms, and they offered it to both Tolik and I. For the conference, where the event was being held was at a campground area. It was really quite lovely. But it was 25 miles from where we were staying. So it was nice. It all worked out. I was just there for a couple of days, but it worked out, you know, and, it was a lot of fun. It was just a lot of fun, and I had a really good time, and it was nice to hook up with some old friends like, Dr. Michael Sala, who I have the greatest respect for, and, Mr. Potter, and I met Tolik for the first time, and Greg Campiasso was there also, was an old friend that I hadn't seen in years. I haven't seen any of these people in years and years and years. And of course, I said I met Tolik for the first time, and it was just it was cool. It was cool.
I think it's fantastic. You know, in the old CB days, we used to call it having an eyeball when you actually met somebody for the first time physically, eyeball to eyeball. It must be an interesting. Now, in terms of your how you feel about you get the sense of people when you meet someone like that. Is it like just as if you were talking with them on Skype, or are there other little things? Do you notice more like physical mannerisms and things like that?
Well, yeah, of course, it's all of that. It's all of that. And it's always that first impression. You know, that first impression is often formed, I think, in the first 30 seconds. And you know, if you like the person or not. And at that point, you know, you make the decision to either explore who that person really is or, you know, to get the hell out of Dodge. Usually. it's interesting. Tolik and I, we didn't talk shop at all. We did not talk shop. We talked just about our past and where he's from and his family. I talked about my family. We didn't talk shop at all. And that was really, really good, actually, because we have differences of opinions, but, you know, neither one of us wanted to even go there. You know, I wanted to meet the man, and he wanted to meet the man. So that's kind of where it was. And even with Dr. Sala, it was the same. You know, we caught up on all the years we hadn't seen each other about, you know, just what was going on. And, It was great.
It must be a wonderful.
There's a lot of really good people.
Yeah, that must have been an incredibly high level kind of conversation that you were having. You know, that you were probably not talking.
It was about family.
Genuine.
It was just extremely genuine.
Wonderful.
You know, I'd love to operate on that level. Mm. Be genuine and being with genuine people and having genuine conversations and genuine feelings. And, you know, it's so rare that we experience that, every day or at all.
Yeah.
With people.
Yeah.
So, it was actually quite a blessing. And, it was rather healing for me too. As you know, well, JP, you know, what's been going on with me.
Yeah.
It's been a rough road.
Very.
Been a pretty tough road.
Very.
The bozos just won't leave me alone.
And I mean, are you still getting hassle from various quarters after the webinar, or is it under the radar in any way?
How do I answer this? They definitely let me know they're there. You know, for example, the webinar, you know, everything was going fine, and all of a sudden my antivirus says you have a virus, you know, and it's a Mac. I mean, Macs almost don't ever get a virus.
That's right.
And then it just shut off. It turned off. The whole thing turned off. And, you know, fortunately I had the phone there and we were able to continue. So, I've been trying to rack my brain for exactly where that happened, because maybe I was talking about something they didn't want me to.
It's possible. I'll have a quick review. It's still available to people. It's on a pay-per-view, which puts the odd penny into Alex's dinner plate. And have you got a new pair of shoes yet? I'm just being practical.
No, I haven't. Well, I haven't gotten the money yet. I mean, it's in Vimeo, and whenever they release it, they release it. So I haven't seen it yet.
Okay. So if anybody wants to make any donations for a few bucks, because shoes are going to be expensive. Shoes are going to shoot up in price due to the conflict with Chinese people and things, because that's where they make the shoes.
Well, I wear cowboy boots. Or as they call them here in the States, shit kickers.
I could do with a pair of them. I have, because there's, you know, I live on a farm, you know, so there's plenty of that stuff lying around. Yeah, I've got my own chickens.
Exactly. You know, toss a patty.
Country pancakes. Uh-huh. Yeah. So I mean. Do you want to talk about how your life has been? I know you're quite kind of private about it, but a lot of the people who listen to you...
I don't want to dwell on the negative. I mean, I'm really trying to focus on you know, positive stuff and being happy, and you know, being happy, you create that resonance, that frequency of joy. And that tends to draw real positive things to you. And that's kind of where I want to be. I mean, you know, I've had two bouts with cancer, been homeless for years. And, you know, I don't want to dwell on that. I mean, anybody who's been there, they know.
Yeah.
You know, there's nothing I can say. They know. It's a mother. Mm. It's just flat out a mother. And it's not only a humbling experience, but it's one of those real character building things, like a divorce, you know. You get right down deep in your soul, and it's painful.
Mm.
So, but I'd rather focus on me, the positive things.
So it's the upward spiral, you know, that we
get out. And just get out of this quicksand.
Mm.
And at least that's the goal here.
So, looking out from the pit, you look up and you think, right, I'm going to go for that. That's what I want to be. I want to be happy. I want to be good.
Right. Do you have towards the light?
What shape
you
does
hope
that
it's
take?
Not a train. You
know? That's right. The old Jordan Mason. What shape does it take for Alex Collier? Because I know what it takes. And I'll talk about it in a little while, because, you know, we're talking about people here. And I'll talk about what I've been getting up to in the last couple of weeks, which has brought me joy. So, what brings Alex joy?
Family, friends, good music, a nice meal, laughter, humor, nature, a vehicle that runs. I think we're all very much the same. You know, we want a foundation, of knowing that we're cared about, knowing that that the people that we care about know that we care about them, you know, just being able to make ends meet, to live some kind of a normal life, whatever that is. I mean, it's different for everybody, I think. Probably, and so is the definition. But just knowing that every day you're making some kind of progress. It may not be material, it may have absolutely nothing to do with materialism, but at least on a character building level, you know, you're getting stronger, you're more awake spiritually, you're getting more and more connected to Creator, to the Holy Spirit, whatever you want to call it. And just, you know, knowing that no matter what else happens, that you're solid inside, that you know what you know, and that you know that you're good, and that you're doing everything that you can, and at the end of the day, when you drop the seat in the back of the Rover, and you put your head on that pillow, or you're in your motel, or you kiss your children goodnight, or you sit out on your porch and you listen to the crickets at night, you know that it was a good day, that you did everything you could, and you feel really good about yourself. You know, just that is miraculous, because, you know, the pirates, they're doing everything they can to create as much fear as possible and disharmony. So it's important to just, you know, stay focused and keep it real, real simple, and not to buy into the drama that they're trying to create. And, you know, that's JP, that's where my focus has been. It's just to keep it really, really simple. And just at the end of the day, you know, I have a list of things that I'm really grateful for. And that is, you know, everything that happened during the day and being alive at the end of the day. And in the morning when I awake, you know, I have my things that I'm grateful for, being awake and, you know, today, and, you know, being able to go to the mountains today and pray, which is what I did. And, you know, talking to you now, I mean, these are all things I'm really, really grateful for.
Oh, that's fantastic. I mean, and likewise, I've been having, what happened, my neighbor destroyed, he tried to get broadband, and the engineer destroyed both of our broadband, so we have no broadband. I'm working on this radio dongle thing, and I don't know, it might cut us off, I don't know, who knows, but it's all very edgy. And but I've had a chance to you know, sit in the garden with my chickens, you know, sit in the sun, which is unusual for me, because I'm mostly here at night. You know, I spend a lot of time at night in here, in the studio, and don't see that much daylight. But I do appreciate it. I like to do sun gazing when it's dawn and dusk, though. I try to be around for dawn and dusk to get some sunlight into the back of my head. That seems to work, and I find that I don't need so much food if I do that.
The sunshine is imperative for health, and you know, it's an incredible enhancer for moods, depression. It's just remarkable, and not to mention, you know, all of the physiological effects, like the creation of vitamin D and the cell regeneration. I mean, I love this. I love to be outdoors.
I've been exploring my other joy, though, Alex, which is a very indoor, very nerdy, geeky thing. My girlfriend keeps saying, stop doing this nerdy thing. But I've been working with microelectronics, and I've been able to get my inventions from my head into my hands. And that is the most fantastic, joyful thing for me.
Well, why don't you talk about that? I'm curious to know what that is.
Well,
if you're ready to share.
I mean, not
that I'm taking over the show. I'm not trying to be the host here.
You can be the host. Today, Journeys, hosted by Alex Cullen. What it is, it's a thing. It's called an Arduino. It's an Italian idea, which is an open source baby computer. And it's got some a series of what they call interrupts. You can put a sensor on it or something like that, it can listen to sensors, and it can change switches. It basically, like what you get in a washing machine, for instance, called a process controller.
Interesting.
But what these Italians have done is create an open source community. And little peripheral devices that go on them. So, like, for instance, a little sonar, like a dolphin uses, and that can detect how far away somebody is from the device. And so what I've been doing is making lights that come on as you approach them and go off as you walk away and fade in and fade out. And that's a combination of hardware and software, which is like, this is the thing. I was like, I gave up hardware when I was 15 because a physics teacher blew me away. I had this brilliant idea that is now called a Bedini motor. And he just said, oh, that's an annoyance. You know, we usually get rid of that energy. I said, where's this energy coming from? We're all getting electric shocks, sir. I said, oh, it's just back EMF. It's just an annoyance. And now we find that, you know, various new energy technologies are using that same back EMF, which was an annoyance and is now an energy source. So I left, you know, sort of hardware physics behind and went into my career, which was computing and, learned how to do programming, and I can program anything and debug all sorts of programs. And so so now I'm coming back with the electronics and bringing the two together. Back in the day, it never used to be the same thing.
Well done.
I'm really pleased. And that's giving me joy, and it's turning me into a five-year-old. And I'm having all these ideas. And one of
that's
the things,
awesome.
One of the things it is, right? So that's how, right? The what is something that I've had a conversation with my spirit guides for the last 10-12 years, which is a device which can flash a special frequency of red. This special frequency of red is 660 nanometers, which is the frequency of the light that travels through your nervous system. You know, your nervous system is like a fiber optic cable. It's not electric.
Yes.
It's fiber optic. And your brain sings to your body to move muscles. You know, it sends frequencies down. So when there are blockages, this light can unblock them. And that's you can use it like an acupuncture thing, but using light, called photonic acupuncture. So anyway, I've been working on devices like that because I've had them in my mind, but I've never had anything that can actually flash an LED at a very specific frequency before. But now I can. I can, you know, flash it at 21.45 hertz or something like that. Now, what use is this? It's to be used in combination with signature sound frequency analysis, where you can detect if somebody is ill or in stress, using the frequencies that are found in the voice by using a spectrum analyzer. Does that make sense? Did any of that make sense, Alex? Or did I lose you at Arduino?
I did. You did.
So yeah, basically, it pulses light into your body that is healing in frequencies.
Okay. Well, the other applications will come to you, I'm sure of it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Having loads of ideas. You know, messing about with what's called RGB, which is basically a pixel. You get an LED, which is one pixel. And you can change it turn it into all sorts of different colors. So I'm making a little theater box for my friend who is analyzing pigment samples, and by looking at things, colored things in different colored lights, you can see what they're made of, which is an interesting application. It's so you shine, for instance, red light, green light, and blue light onto the one sample, and you'll see what lights up is what is red and what is green and what is blue about it, and you can actually see it very clearly, and you can get good color matching like that. And this is for my friend who's matching pigments from old buildings.
Well, that's quite interesting. you know, maybe at some point that technology will be part of a holographic camera that can be used to heal people.
Like Wouldn't that be nice, Alex?
It would be, wouldn't it, if we were able to put it all together and do it ourselves?
Yeah. Because I've heard you speak about this thing. The holographic camera, and I've heard Randy Kramer talking about this, is that they've got one. The Secret Space Program have one of those, or many of them probably.
I did not know that. That's cool.
Well, that's what he says. I mean, some people, Randy's the only person who says what he says, but a lot of it sounds like he lives in a Star Trek world, but you know and I know that Star Trek is a documentary and not a fiction.
Exactly. Exactly.
So, I mean, do you know about Gene Roddenberry? Do you know what his real story was?
You know, I don't know. The only little bits that I do know is what I heard Sean David Morton talk about years ago.
Oh, and by the way, he says hello.
Okay. That's awesome.
Yeah.
I haven't talked to Sean in years, and, you know, please send him my regards as well.
I will indeed. He has the show before in the slot before this, except he wasn't here tonight.
Slacker.
Yeah, no, he's on some cruise somewhere, you know, like schmoozing and cruising.
You know.
Flouncing. That's the word his wife used this word. Flouncing around the country, darling.
Must be nice.
Yeah. But I mentioned that we were doing these webinars, and he said, oh, Alex, I was sending my best regards. Yeah, it'd be nice to get everybody together again, you know.
It would be fun. Well, you know, I've always had this dream or this vision of taking the leading people in the field, including the contactees and the most notable abductees that were willing to do it, and for a week, if it was possible, 4 or 5 days, put them in a hotel where we had this big conference room surrounded by boards, and each person would have a board, and they would write down some of the most important things that they were shown or that they were told, or information that they have gleaned from their experience. And then what we would do is we would sit down and we would look for all the commonalities on every single board, and we would sit down and we would talk about those infinitum, about all the commonalities that all of us have experienced separately, you know, and then try to form a picture of exactly what may be going on that we would, you know, form that based on our own perspectives of the commonalities that all of us have had in that room, and form some kind of perspective of what's going on, as opposed to, you know, listening to any one particular group or any one contactee or any specific group of ETs that share information, you know, that we will take the information, take the commonalities, and try to form an idea, an opinion, or perspective of what we think is really going on. At least what it would do is it would solidify some of the information, and it would put all of us on at least the same page. It doesn't mean we would agree on everything, but at least we would all be on the same page, and we would know, you know, what's the thread that is running through each one of our experiences. That is something I've always wanted to do.
Would that make Alex Scully
it would
happy?
Be very, very worthwhile.
Would that make Alex Scully happy?
I think so.
Let's make it happen, Alex.
Yeah, it would.
Let's make it happy.
It would.
Let's make Alex happy, and let's make that happen. Yeah, we could do that. We could do that.
Because I think we know a lot more than we realize. It's just that it's all scattered about, you know.
Do you know?
I think we know a lot more because, you know, the military-industrial complex, the government people, other intelligence agencies, you know, they're paying attention to what the people know and what the people are talking about. And that's because the populace of humanity, we have this inherent common sense about things, and we get information that we may not even realize how important it is, but they do, because they're looking for pieces of things, because everybody knows on every different level of intelligence there's a different lie, and they also know that there's compartmentalization on every single level, and that one group knows this piece, another group knows that piece, but it's never put together, you know, because no one's allowed to share that information. Well, humanity, we're kind of at the bottom. It's kind of like shifting, you know, a gold pan. You know, we're looking for the gold because it all comes down to us somehow. And we're the gold panners. And I really believe that if we could put this information together, we know more than we realize. And, you know, right now, information is power.
You know, this is... I was having a kind of similar thought this afternoon. And, you know, I've mentioned it to you, and I spoke to Simon Parks about it. He's interested. And Tolek is interested. You know, they're actually interested in coming over to Britain and having a, cause I could organize a week here in Newbold House, which is a part of the Findhorn Foundation. And, it's a hotel and a conference place. It's in an old mansion house in Northern Scotland. It's beautiful. And, there's a lot of nature here, plenty of nature, more nature than you want. Dead things on the road, yeah. Critters.
okay.
And, you know, so this is a thought. This is I don't know if it would be possible to do, but Tolek would love this. I mean, he's like, when are you going to do this? When are you going to do this? Like, I got to practice. You know, I like to start small. I like to do one thing, see if it works, then do another thing. And then if it keeps working, then we make it work, you know? And so
sure.
We've kicked off, the next series of projects. I mean, we've had Wolf Spirit Radio, okay, and we've been working that for the last year. Now Colleen Kelly and Richard and Vanessa and Nancy and Walt, and you know, we've got a whole group of people who are working together. And actually, it's as if nobody missed me. I was suddenly offline for 2 weeks, and they all coped brilliantly. And also Willow, who runs Revolution Radio's End of Things in Britain, coped with me not being here the last week because I was offline for more than a week. But it's been wonderful. So that has been a year to build up to this point. So now we start wallspirit.tv. And we're doing this with the webinars, at the first. And, so I'm very pleased to announce for the first time, on a lovely, lovely big audience here, that there will be a second webinar, and it will be in, exactly 7 days. It'll be next week, at 11 a.m. PST, which is, what's that in Colorado time, Alex?
That's noon. Noon in Colorado.
Noon in Colorado. And, it will be, I suppose that's 2 o'clock Eastern. It's, $12 and, maybe Alex will be able to buy a nice pair of shoes, very comfortable shoes. It's really important. No, I'm not kidding. I mean, I want to hear Alex in a nice pair of shoes. I'm a Piscean, by the way, and for me, my feet are very, very important. If I'm not happy in my feet, my whole beingness is not happy. So it's very important for everybody to have good shoes. So do come along, come to Wolf Spirit Radio, and I've got the banner up there, and you can go to alexcollier.org, is on my... James doesn't even know this, Alex. he's saying, oh, yeah. So we've got alexcollier.org, you can click in there and book a ticket to come next week, 7 days time, to Alex's second webinar. And you got some interesting questions last week. What do you think? Last month,
I did, and I know you and I talked about doing something separate and answering the questions that we didn't get to. But you know, you've had your issues, obviously, but maybe we can get to those. You know, now that you're almost, you know, fully 100% operational. And, you know, I love the Q&A. I do, because, you know, a lot of times I don't realize how much I know or what I know until somebody asks the question. You know, when you talk to a RIF that's telepathic, you know, yes, you're having a conversation and you're hearing words, but there is so much more going on in the background. And that is that whatever they're thinking as well about a specific topic, you also get. You also get some of their memories as well, because it's telepathy is the absolute sharing of information. And if you have two beings that are completely open with each other, there are no secrets. There just are no secrets. So that's why I like the Q&A.
It seems to unlock things. And
it does. That's exactly right.
And I think it's like they gave you lots of little parcels for people, and you don't know who they are, but they will come up to you in the future and trigger that little thing, to trigger that. Go ahead.
That is exactly right. You know, I'll get a piece of information, which I have over the years, and I'm like, oh, okay, well, I don't know what to do with that, so I just put it away, you know. And somebody will ask a question, and the wheels start to turn, the gears start moving, and then all of a sudden, boom, there's the information. Oh, I remember when I was given that, and I had no idea what it was about or what it was for, you know, and then suddenly it comes up, and it's a piece. It's just a piece that somebody needed, or it's a piece of something that reveals something else or brings something else into perspective. I mean, it's just amazing. It never ceases to amaze me, honestly. You know, what we know, what we are all so capable of, it's just amazing. God, we're all such miracles. You wouldn't know it living on this planet because they've grinded us in the dirt. But, I mean, we are all just miracles. And, you know, it's time we stand up and we just say, you know, enough of this Bravo Sierra. Really.
Indeed.
It's time to take back our power and just tell these guys, you know, you're done. Get out of here. Go home. You know, go home. Leave us alone.
So to that end, you remember you were talking about the quarantine field, the Archonic grid,
and
how in the webinar you were talking about when the A's would come pick you up, they come and sit in the web.
Well, they would fit. They would fit in. They would park themselves in the fence, mm-hmm. and purposely burn holes in it. You know, and so do the other groups. So do the other groups. They do exactly the same thing. And, it, you know, it's basically, it's their way of giving the controllers on this planet the middle finger.
Indeed,
you know?
Indeed.
So, it's, you know, yeah.
Really?
I mean, there's a lot of gamesmanship going on as well as this incredibly intricate spiritual physical game of chess that's going on, and it's quite elaborate, it's quite complicated, you know, and directly right in the middle of it is humanity. So, you know, we need to step up our game for sure and get in the game. You know, we need to get in the game. We can't sit on the sidelines anymore. We need to project ourselves, our dreams, our hopes, our wishes, our focus into this to help create the outcome we all want. We just have to do that. Because, you know, we're the linchpin here, because this is all about us. You know, we're the linchpin. So we have to engage the process. And, you know, JP, whether people want to believe in aliens or not, none of that matters. And, you know, I know that there are a lot of people very confused. Are they good? Are they not? Contactees contradict each other. Researchers say everybody's fraud. It goes on and on and on. And you don't really know what to believe. So I guess the bottom line is, you know, for everyone, whether you're into the ET phenomena or not, the bottom line is this: spiritually evolve and mature yourself consciously. Make the effort to consciously evolve yourself spiritually. That's all you have to do. But the time to do it is now. And just have faith that you're doing it the right way. If whatever you're doing, you at the end of it, you feel joy, then you're on the right path. If you're not feeling joy, then you need to tweak it, and you need to figure out how do you make yourself happy, okay, so that when you're done with that 10 minutes, that 15 minutes, that 30 minutes, whatever time you have of just, you know, voluntary introspection, that you feel joy. And then you try to hold on to it through the day. You project the joy through the day, and it will get easier as you find out what your process is, what your buttons are that connects your soul to that place of joy. I mean, we all have to go through it, but, you know, that's the bottom line. No matter what, that's the bottom line. All the other crap, none of that else really, really matters. Some people are into it. I'm into it. Okay? But the bottom line is, it's really all about spiritual evolution. There you go. I'm off my soapbox.
Get down here, Alex. No, it's great. No, it's you know, because we need a bit of a rallying call. Because there's so much confusion. There's too much confusion.
Yeah.
And I can't get no relief. Because there's so much. Sorry, I couldn't help that. All right. So, Revolution Radio drops. Oh, well, I'm recording it. I've got the master tape here. We're coming to this point. Well, maybe we might be covering some of the topics next week. So do you want to give us a little bit of the teaser on some of the topics you might want to cover, Alex?
Well, that was one,
yeah.
What we just talked about.
Yes, indeed.
Agenda 21 is another.
Oh, yes.
The Vatican, about the rise in frequency on the planet and what that really looks like and exactly what is happening, so that we can all have some perspective on it, and how as the frequency begins to increase, the powers that be, the consortium, the regressives, are going to do everything they can to try to make us afraid of the frequency, the change in frequency, because that's the only tool they have left in their box, is to create fear. And if we don't buy into it, you know, they're done. Game over for them.
Well, exactly.
So,
and
they need to leave. They need to leave. They need to go home, or whatever. That wherever they go, they need to go there. They need to leave us alone. You know, they need to set us free. End of story. It's just time for them to set us free.
It's like we have to be toxic. We have to be poison to the people who are drinking us or eating us. No longer palatable.
Well, they can't absorb love.
Exactly.
They can't absorb joy. Okay, so who's really toxic? Okay. Who's really toxic? They are. You know, they can't absorb any of that. Okay, all they can absorb is negativity, fear, poverty, sorrow. So they create it in us because we are their, you know, energetic as well as physical food sources. We are a resource to them. So, you know, when you break it down, who's really toxic? By our true nature, we're not. We're not toxic. By their very nature, they are. So, anyway, we're going to talk in depth about some of that, too.
Excellent.
So I don't want to give it all away. No. Otherwise, you know, nobody will.
How about research that people can do for themselves in the intervening time to bring people up to speed so that they may understand better and ask you better questions? Who would you recommend to listen to in terms of research on those, on the aspects of those on the background?
Boy, that's a great question, JP. I don't really know. I don't really know. God, I don't know.
Okay, sorry.
I'll have to get back to you on that. My internet access has been so limited that I honestly don't know how to answer that question.
All right. So, well, let's start with Agenda 21, because People can look up the actual documents and read them online. And one of them, if I'm not mistaken, is called... No, this is not the Project for the New American Century. It's the Project 2045 or something like that. 2045, is that the buzzword? I can't remember. Or is it 2024? I don't know. It's all approaching very quickly. You know, we're nearly at 2020.
Yeah, well, I know that the Pope, the leader of the Roman Catholic Church, the Vatican in Rome, I believe he is going to be making a speech here soon. And he is calling for the implementation of Agenda 21 internationally between now and 2030. And if people research that, I'll tell you what their blueprint was here for the states, for the colonies, for those of you in Europe. They were going to basically outlaw private property. And they were going to move everyone into the city areas, okay, into large cities. There would be vast corridors of land that is non-human habitation. Zero. Except for the elites, probably. And then they would decide who's going to live and who's going to die, because at the very end of Agenda 21, what it calls for is the elimination of about two-thirds of the world's population. So, you know, you are more than welcome to research that yourself, and you will see that for yourself. These are, you know, this is the vicar of Christ, I think he calls himself, actually wanting to propose this. So it's clear that the Pope or the Vatican has gone to the dark side of the force.
It's just
like, there it is, you know. So we'll see. We'll see what happens. Do I actually think they're going to be able to pull this off? No, I don't. But who attempts to carry out a plan like this? That's a human being. You know, it's just, oh my God.
It's
oh my God.
It's not, it's somebody who regards human beings as the same way that a farmer regards cattle. Or a chicken, you know, they have an ear tag with a number, and that's it. And as far as relationship is concerned, that's about it. You know, the number. And this is a very interesting thing, because it's not just Earth, it's not just this planet where this kind of thing goes on. This goes on all over the galaxy, all over the universe, isn't it?
Well, it has gone on. In other places in the galaxy, it has gone on. You know, we're kind of at the end of the line for this bunch, and unfortunately, they're here. JP, it's complicated. Just complicated, and I can see why there are people. It's just like, you know, I don't even want to deal with this thing about the ETs and all that. I get that. I still get that. Oh my God. You know, which is why I say, you know, the bottom line is it's about spiritual evolution, you know, becoming your mature spiritual self and connecting to source of all that is. And, you know, being, what was it that, be the change in the world that you want to see, you know,
yes, indeed.
That's it. That's what it is.
Create the future that you expect to find.
There you go. That works too. Yep.
And
anyway,
and well, this is the thing. You know, this is the opposite of the joy that we're wanting to bring. And in a way, if we didn't, you know, this is the thinking is is that if we didn't have these dark force pressures upon our consciousness, we wouldn't evolve in the way that we need to evolve. In the same way that, you know, when I was 25, I had a motorbike crash that changed the way I looked at the world and turned me from a kind of a tech into a healer, It's like, but it totally expanded my point of view, even though it was the worst thing that ever happened.
You know, yeah, that's one of those character building experiences. You know, where your heart's ripped out and put back, and it's, you know, you're just like, oh my God, you know, what's happened? And yeah, they're real tough. They can be really, really tough, but they always build inner strength and inner character. And, you know, in the end, it is those things that we end up falling back on during what we would consider difficult, hard times, you know, to pull that inner strength out and to make us, give us the ability to, carry on, as the British like to say, you know, to carry on.
As if nothing really matters. Six week quoting songs tonight. Hawk was saying,
what?
You said carry on, as if nothing really matters. It's a Bohemian Rhapsody.
Well, I'm simplifying, obviously, but you know, hey.
I know, but it's like, you know, our lives are soundtracked by these songs and music that just pass through. Like the movies and the sci-fi programs that we saw when we were kids. You know, I remember seeing all these things. The Gerry Anderson. Did you come across Gerry Anderson? He was like the English version of Gene Roddenberry. And he did a show called Thunderbirds. You ever hear of Thunderbirds or Stingray? No?
No.
All right. Well,
no.
They were big
no,
in Britain.
I guess that.
Excellent things because they were full of disclosure. But they were puppet shows.
Okay.
I'm not kidding, Alex. They were marionettes. I mean, if you look, you just Google.
Oh, my God. I remember those now. Yes.
Yes.
Oh, that was 100 years ago.
Wasn't it? It was actually 50.
Yeah,
but, I mean,
well,
yeah.
Maybe it was 100 years ago.
Yeah. but you're right. It was giving us everything that we've been talking about the last 10, 15, 20 years coming out, showing that that's actually real and that the news has more fiction than your Star Treks, you know.
Yeah. I wanted to just say there was a song by David Crosby from Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young and Phil Collins. And I think the name of the song was Hero. And it was basically about a romance novel story or hero from a romance novel. But what was interesting about the song is that it implies that, you know, our lives are our story. And in that, if we are able to step out of our lives and start paying more attention to writing our story, we would have more control. We could fulfill the dreams and things that we want. We figure out a way to make those dreams and realities come about because we are an active participant in writing our story as opposed to allowing events to control our lives. And, you know, in the end, I think we can all be heroes. We can be heroes to ourselves and to our families. And it doesn't matter what your station is in life. It really doesn't. I have a good friend named Tim, and he knows someone who has a radio show in L.A., and they were talking to Wayne Dyer just a few days before he passed in his sleep. And Tim was telling me about this conversation where this radio show host, she was talking to Mr. Dyer, and Wayne Dyer was telling her that he never felt better in his life than he had at that particular time. He was on top of his game. And he passed shortly thereafter. So my point is, We never know how many days we have. We never know. So start today.
Excellent. We'll be back. This is a hard break. We'll be back in a few minutes. Take a break, get your tea, have a nice cup of coffee or something. Yes. There we go. That was the song that Alex mentioned. Phil Collins and David Crosby and Hero. Rather low volume, but there we go. Yes, indeed. I will take calls if anybody wants to discuss anything that I've been talking about with Alex in the last hour, or just want to have a talk about stuff. You know, it might be nice to keep it on topic, but if anybody wants to talk about other stuff. So there we go, wonderful. David Crosby has there. So we got this thing, and wolfspirit.tv is kind of starting to crank up. We'll be doing more video things. The better my broadband gets, the better the situation gets on Wolfspirit. The more bandwidth I have, the more TV I can produce. At the moment, it's down a little skinny line that hopefully will be fixed tomorrow, and I'll be back online with a vengeance next week. But until that time, well, we'll see what happens. And if you'd like to call in, you have to call in the Studio B, because I'm actually coming in through Studio B, and Hawk is reproducing that on Studio A. If you want to call in, I'm on 310-421-4053, you can call from Britain, 0141-356-4141, if you wish to, join, you can come up on Freedom Screen 2 on Skype. Indeed you can. So that was Alex Collier. Basically, I was just arranging the webinar that we're doing next week and talking about publicity. And I said, look, I've got a show in 10 minutes, so should we just do a quick one? It was nice to have an insight into the man, rather than just slipping information out of him all the time. I think it was a very nourishing thing to do for myself. You know, we often, you know, like he says, talk shop, and it's nice to actually talk stuff. So, Gorilla Tape. Yeah, it looks like I could do some Gorilla Tape. Yeah, I like Gorilla Tape. We have a stuff called Gaffer Tape, which seems to be like halfway between duct tape and Gorilla Tape. It's quite sticky. And indeed, if it's too sticky, here's a little handy hint. If it's too sticky, put it on your jeans and then peel it back off again. It makes it half as sticky. There you go. That's a little handy little hint for you. Yes, if you'd like to join in this conversation, please. We'll be, I'm just going to get the, right. Okay. I've got both chat rooms here. There we go. Area code 360. Good afternoon. Who's that and where are you?
I'm Zane. I'm in Washington State.
Zane, as in Zane, the man who's been building things with bricks and stuff.
Right. I wanted to tell you a little story about this, because you had this coding project where you had created these different colors, red, green, blue.
Yes.
And you said they had different vibrations and stuff.
Yeah.
I don't know if you, I linked to the video, and I built this blue temple in my backyard. It has 8 columns, and they stand on a platform. And those columns, they're actually, JP, they're actually capacitors. I mean, you think about it, there's sewer pipe, but it's, they're insulated, and then there's a metal chain that holds them together, which is, you know, by definition a capacitor. So I've got this array of capacitors there. And I'd originally painted them, this whole temple thing, it was all white. But then I thought, well, you know, the stories are with the Greeks, they built these temples and they were all really wild colors. So I decided to just, I heard about this artist that had created some geometrical shapes and painted them these colors, and he said that they represented some kind of alien intelligence. And so I thought it was an interesting concept. So I adopted the color, that blue. It's a kind of electric blue. And the funny thing about it was when I was painting these columns, this temple, like this, I don't know, it's weird, I had heard this voices or something, but I heard this, I had this impression that, you know, there was some intelligence there. And, I had this sense that it had a name. And, so I was like, what? And so I said, what is your name then? You know, because I was thinking that, you know, you build a temple, it becomes, you know, there's capacitance there, there's,
you
know, a sacred site. Maybe it's a, maybe, it, you know, it has some entity or something. You know what the name was that I got back was Globe.
That Globe. So what it sounds like is that you're connecting with, these are what are known as archetypal forms, which exist on high planes of existence. They're mathematically pure entities, which are made of mathematically pure, numerologically correct. You know, they're like the template for which all other things would be. So yes, if you've created a globe, there'll be a globe who lives there. And I had this a very similar thought, because years ago I used to build pyramids, and I noticed that the form of the being, the pyramid was like, it was a place for somewhere to sit. And it's interesting, I just heard a little thing earlier on that Walt Silver was talking about, which was that our bodies are a container for the consciousness, in the same way that a crystal skull is a container for the crystal consciousness. And so what you're talking about there is a container for the geometric consciousness that you're invoking here by creating a spherical vortex. Does that make sense?
Well, which is interesting. It's funny that you should say that, because a lot of these temples are aligned with each other. And, you know, I'm not sure, you know, I'd like to ask your opinion about this, because there is so many alignments between France and making these shapes and everything. You know what I mean? Glastonbury and all these different sacred sites, they have these geometrical lines that are there, just seem to be right on them. But they didn't, that was before GPS and satellites and all that. Did this happen, do you think, on a conscious level? Did they build these temples on a conscious level, or did they have some kind of unconscious prompting that made them put the temple just right there? Do you know what I mean?
There could be a combination of knowledge and intuitive working and basic. Well, look, we don't know how our ancestors perceived. You know, we don't know whether we see the same colors as they did. Yeah? We don't even know that.
Or their accent. We have no idea how they spoke English.
Exactly. you know, they're talking about Sumerian actually being pronounced with German accent. You know, imagine that. We don't know this stuff. But I read a book many, many years ago when I was about 23. So that would have been in the 70s and 80s, called The Old Straight Track by Alfred Watkins. And this book was written in the 1920s. And he was like a rambler. Do you know what a rambler is? This bloke who goes around with, you know, baskets and just goes rambling, collecting berries and stuff across the countryside. And there was one point when he was above, he was right up on the top of a hill, and he could see the whole area laid out in front of him, and something in his perception flipped, and he saw these glowing lines of energy moving between them. And that started the whole research that he did, and he deeply researched this, and discovered that there are many words that are connected with ley lines and the making of ley lines and the workings of ley lines. And one of them basically is, if your name ends in L-E-Y, it means you came from a place that had a purpose. So, for instance, salt was the white stuff. So if you were in a place where salt was mined or sold,
right,
you would be a place called Whiteley or Saltley, you know? It's very obvious.
Is Salzburg related?
Salzburg, probably. That's the Salt Hill. You know, maybe. I don't know. I don't know what salt is. Maybe it's sauce. I've had a German girlfriend for 3 years, and my German is rubbish still. Even my pronunciation is rubbish. But anyway.
Well, you know where I got this from was Dan Winter. I've been following
Dan. Yes. I've had him on the show once or twice, yeah.
Mm. Yeah, yeah, and so, in fact, I talked to Dan and I told him about my backyard that I was building this, according to, you know, I built this stone building, to go with it. It's the backyard has these two different, themes to it. One is the temple, which is more of a projection, outward projection, whereas the temple is more of a meditation, more of an inward, like taking in type of thing, like a breath that goes in and out. And, according to his principles, which I, you know, adhere to, I avoided as much metal. I avoided using any metal.
Yeah.
In the construction of the stone building, I had to kind of with the rafters, but the top is pretty much glued on there with some high tech glue and stuff. It's kind of like a guitar in there, and there is kind of like a sacred quality to it, of kind of fractal air, maybe.
Did you use millimeters or inches?
For the columns?
For everything.
I used inches. They're all like 50 inches, which I thought was, I had read for somewhere, is 2 cubits. A
there
cubit is 25 inches is what I'd heard. That may not be correct.
It varies apparently, but you know, it sounds like you did it in a very intuitive way. By the way, are you Zane who used to be on the Avalon Camelot forum?
No,
different Zane. Okay. Anyway, so
you may know me. I'm kind of famous on the internet. I'm the producer of the video "All Wars Are Bankers' Wars."
All wars are bankers' wars. I don't know if I've seen that yet, but I'd certainly agree. That's the Catherine Austin Fitz model of central banks and war, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, this is Michael Rivero.
Yeah, and indeed, it's all banks, all monetary systems are Ponzi schemes.
Yeah. Well, I just used the audio. I just made a video. I used the audio from him, and it's got over 1 million views on it, and I'm going to launch it on Vimeo here next month.
Nice.
So re-edit and everything. So.
All right. Well, throw a link in the chat room there in Revolution Radio, and so people can know.
Oh, okay. Well, you know, when I was back to Dan Winter, I talked to him on the phone, and I told him about my backyard. And he said, "Well, why did you do this?"
That's one of the questions. Yeah. What were you thinking? What were you thinking?
Well, he talked about charge having, life giving, health giving. The more charge you're able to carry, the more naturally, the more powerful you are. Right? It follows. Well, I'm watching. This was years ago. I built this. Over 10 years ago, probably like 14 years ago now. But I was seeing, 9/11 and all this stuff. Actually, I built it before 9/11, the temple part, anyway. But was seeing all this stuff happen, and it's bad, man. They're evil people and stupid, and they seem to be in charge of everything. I mean, we're in a lot of trouble, us normal people. And so I thought, well, you know, it's an experiment in politics. Applying Dan Winter's, you know, ideas about charge and everything, because to have charge, to be in charge, isn't that maybe not a political thing, maybe not so much a worldly thing, but maybe just on pure principle, it could have some effect. This is a shot in the arm for any kind of political things that I wanted to do or say, or some initiative I wanted to start. If it were rooted in the earth, grounded in the earth, that's maybe a good thing.
It is magical work.
You know, because, you know, JP, I think a lot of our trouble is, you know, you and I, we'll probably, you know, understand, you know, like the perceptions and stuff, you know, a little bit closer to the ancients. These moderns, they're up in those skyscrapers. They're many floors above the earth. They're so disconnected from the earth. They're like some other species. If they're making all these financial deals from the 19th floor, I mean, that's a problem.
It's a different stratum, isn't it? And that was interesting. There was a Doctor Who, I don't know if you know Doctor Who episode, but there was one Doctor Who episode where there was a vortex, and the vortex was kind of right up in the air. And so they built a tower block in order to capture the vortex on, like, the 23rd floor or something like that. And I think this may be a reason that they have buildings like that, that there are vortexes up in the air that they can perceive or detect. Oh. And that's why they make tall buildings.
Okay.
You know? I'm riffing on this, sure, you know?
I see the rationale. Mm. But on the other hand, I can see why it might be a positive thing to be up in the air, to build a tower, you know, to build a, you know, mighty tower and to be up. Let me just tell you this short little anecdote about connection to the earth. There was this researcher that went throughout uncivilized worlds, I guess, you know, Africa or something. And he was studying, there were cannibals there. There's still cannibals there. And he wanted to know why these people were still like this, right, after all this time. So he went there and he studied them and tried to find if there were anything that stood out about them and their culture and the way they lived. And as it turns out, they all lived on these bogs where the feet didn't actually touch the ground. They were on a system of really dense roots. And so he kind of drew a line there between, the fact that we have this need as human beings to be connected to the earth, and more or less directly, I mean, if we're up on these bogs and these roots and stuff, bad things happen. They start eating each other and stuff. It's bad.
That's a very, they say it's a dog-eat-dog world. There's an interesting corollary with this. There's, you know the Russians, right? The Russians have these, they've developed etheric detection and, you know, etheric machines and stuff like that. They don't care. They don't care about our proper laws of physics that says this stuff shouldn't happen, but yet it does. All right. So the Russians develop these machines and they use them on their sports people, right? They have these things that check all their chakras and they check their higher bodies and all their stuff and all the subtle bodies and everything. And they have all the technology. And you know what they do? Do you know what they say when they say, okay, well, your fifth chakra on your mental body is out of alignment. Do you know what they say? Go and stand outside on the grass for 20 minutes, okay? Huh? That's what they say. That's how they treat all of these energetic influences. Go and stand on the grass.
Well, you know, and we sometimes get a lot of guidance and wisdom from places we don't really think of. I'm reminded of this story of this researcher many years ago was studying this one physics lab, science lab, was head and shoulders above the rest at the time. They were making all these discoveries. They seemed to really know what they were doing. So he went I guess he was maybe a journalist. He went to, ask them, congratulate them and write a story about this really fantastic, lab. And so he went to the head researcher and he said, of course they had, the niceties and everything. And then, he finally asked the question, is there anything that you do here that's maybe different from all the other labs? So, where do you get all these ideas? And the researcher said, well, it's funny that you should ask that, because every time that we get stumped on something, it seems like we never really have a breakthrough unless we go to the three B's. And he said, three B's? What were the three B's? And the researcher said, the bed, the bath, and the bus. Those are the three places where it seems like that's where always, which is counterintuitive. You'd think that they would come up with these answers in the lab somehow, but they don't. It comes to them when they're not in the lab. They're either in a bathtub taking a bath, or sleeping or something in a dream, or when they're riding along in a bus with a bunch of people, then all of a sudden stuff happens.
Well, that's very interesting. One of the things my spiritual teacher said, because like one day I was trying to I was trying to have all these pure thoughts and ouch.
Uh-oh.
Who's whistling?
Oh, sorry.
Yeah. I was trying to have all these pure thoughts and I needed to go to the toilet, so I went to the toilet. Bathroom and. I was trying not to think of my teacher and stuff, and I brought it up to him, and he said, no, that's really cool, because what it meant was that your base center and your crown center are open, and that allows spirit to go all the way from the crown center down to the base center, and that is how you get inspirations. You get a message from your crown coming into your base, and that's where Kundalini rises up from. That's the natural process of inspiration, and it's like the splash of a drop of water as it hits the water. Does that make sense?
Oh, a funny thing happened. Now that you mentioned that, regarding this temple, after I had built it, I was in the bathroom, like you say, maybe that explains why this happened. But I was in there. The way I explain it is. And most people don't get this. Maybe this is more of a more British humor. I don't know, but if someone who's is really a serious person, they say about them that they don't whistle when they piss, kind of thing. But anyway, so I was I was really serious and about life and stuff, and I built this temple and everything, which I have a right to be. So because I'm now a priest or something or some sort. So anyway. I was telling people that I was a serious person, that I don't whistle when I piss, and I never did, except when I went in there, I couldn't help but start. I felt this whistle coming on. I was pissing, and I felt this whistle coming on. I said, what are we doing? What? I don't whistle when I piss. So then right when I was struggling to get rid of the whistle, I hear this voice, and it says, Saturday, August 4th. So what's that? So that, you're saying that the chakras are open. So I went over and I opened the, because this was several months before August. So I went through the pages and I looked through, and it was in March or something. So I had to flip several pages and looked at August. And sure enough, August 4th fell on a Saturday, which happens every 7 years or 5 years or whatever. But it just happened. It was that year. It was Saturday, August 4th.
Obama's birthday.
So
isn't
I guess.
It?
What's that?
Obama's
I guess
birthday.
So, yes. Yeah. But this was 2001. I mean, this was a long time ago.
Uh-huh.
There just so happened to be at the local New Age bookstore, there was a girl that offered rituals for a fee. She would do for a fee, she would do some kind of custom ritual. So I hired her. It was like $100 or something. She came over and she decorated the temple kind of thing. And she went through this like ritual thing on August 4th. Nothing happened. But I thought, it was like this thing wanted to be inaugurated or something. Oh, there's that word, August.
Interesting. August. It augurs. in the autumn.
Yeah. But I had also proclaimed myself emperor. So, you know, the number four on August 4th, you know, the four, the Trump card, four is the emperor card.
So Emperor Zane of Washington State, do you have your own fiefdom?
Well, I had several iterations of it. My latest one is called Civitas State.
Spell that?
C-I-V-I-T-A, Civitas State. And I'm the emperor, but my empire is not of this world. So I have a way out.
It can be as big as you like. In fact, it can be. You know, we are infinite, and we're infinite on the inside, and everybody's got their own universe inside them. That's just incredible. You know, because you could think of ourselves as, you know, if we were planetary scale, you know, if we were the size of a planet, a bacteria that would be sitting on our skin would be like us, you know, having a conversation like this. And
would be a what?
Would be the size of us. You know, compared with Earth, you know, we're about the size of bacteria, aren't we?
Oh, all right.
You know, in terms of the scale, you know. in terms of the scale of the universe, our solar system is like a cell, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, right.
Or the galaxy, you know. And it's all a kind of fractal of it. And so I suppose where I'm getting to is like we have all of these different levels of being, which I think are all trying to exist at the same place at the same time and kind of settle into the same thing. Like this, we were talking about the consciousness of the globe creature wanting to sit in a globe-shaped thing, in the same way that a pyramid is an octagon that sits halfway on the ground. It's actually, there's a pyramid underneath pointing downwards as well as a pyramid up. And so the, you know, it's a crystalline being that is an octagon that lives half in the ground and half in the air in the pyramid.
Right. Oh, there's one other thing. I got on Google Earth. Google Earth. Yeah, from satellite you can see the planet. And I zoomed down on my backyard and I drew a line from the stone portal to the temple, and it's like a ley line or like a flight line. You know, like a pilot would have a heading.
It's a straight line. What's the direction?
Yeah, there's a line there. It's really kind of a strange angle. It's not in alignment with any of the streets here. They run north south. This is on a kind of a southeast angle.
All right. Oh, okay. And hang on. Oh, sorry. Keep going. But I've got something really, really important to add about the ley lines and what they are. Hang on.
Oh, okay. Well, from satellite, I could see this angle, and I drew the line, and wow, I went right to Chichen Itza. Wow, how cool! It just lined up. You know, if you stand there in the stone building and you look at those columns, those blue columns, it just goes right to on the other side of that. It's a straight line to Chichen Itza. That's neat. But then I drew the line on the other side, and it went right to Fukushima. I mean, right to Fukushima.
So there's a potential there that you may be able to heal something, because it's the etheric body of the planet that has been affected. And if you're on that place, you perhaps are being led to inject or cleanse the energies of... You know, it's like maybe even it's a bit like a leeching. It's like instead of going to Chichen Itza, you leech it out here wherever you are and head it off and cleanse it. You see what I mean?
Well, you know,
discharge
it. Yeah, recharge
it.
You know, it's not just my house that's in this alignment. I mean, this whole town. Right, I mean, that whole region is like right in between here.
Yeah,
and there's a kind of a phi ratio in the correspondence. There's if you take the distance between here and on Chichen Itza and multiply it by 1.6, yeah, there's Fukushima. It's pretty close.
Yeah,
not exactly, but it's
233 just now. 2:33. So listen, here's the thing, right? Alfred Watkins, The Old Straight Track. You can get it on Scribd, I'm sure, right? It's an old book, but you can get it, right? The Old Straight Track. It's all about what ley lines are about. Now, here's the thing, because I got digressed on the ley name. In the old days, there were men and women. They were called the Dodd people. And what the action of dodding was, is that you would take a stick, a long stick, about 6 feet long. You stick it in the ground. And you go a few paces away, and you take another stick, and you stick that stick in line with a peak in one direction. And then you take the first stick, and then you make that in line with the second peak, which is your destination. And you keep uprooting stick by stick and lining them up more and more until you finally got them both in exactly the same line. Okay? This is done by the Dodd people, and this thing is called doddering. You hear of doddering, is moving from side to side.
Sure.
Okay, you see people are dodder, you know? So, Dodley is a place where there are lots of dodders. That's where they come from. They're, you know, very earthy characters. But they were the people who walked the lines, and they sighted peak to peak, because what basically you get a peak is a peak of energy. And between the peaks are lines. And so what they would do is they would draw down the energy, they would draw down the energy from these peak lines down into the ground and create their temples. And that's what your temple is doing, and that's what you're doing. Does that make any sense?
Wow, yeah. That's kind of what I had, I was doing, but, you know, hardly anybody understands. You know, I mean, they go, oh, wow, that's nice, that made me something, but... I don't know.
Whereabouts are you, Dave?
What's that?
Whereabouts are you?
Well, I'm... do you know where the Puget Sound area is up here in Washington State?
I've heard of that. You're near Cliff High, aren't you?
Oh, not too far from him. Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, there's Seattle.
Mm-hmm.
Well, about 100 miles west of Seattle. Kind of across this water... waterway called Puget Sound.
You're in Twin Peaks country, aren't you?
Well, I was. They filmed Twin Peaks where I was born. I was born in Snoqualmie, where they filmed that.
Snoqualmie, yes. You know,
Snoqualmie's
a fantastic place.
Kind of a ways away from here.
Yeah, Snoqualmie's got this amazing waterfall where rainbows spontaneously come out of the mist. And you do get rainbows all over the place, don't you, at Snoqualmie? I used to have a screensaver in this is how old I am. Windows 95 had a screensaver that you could buy from Syntrillium, who was this amazing software company who made this Snoqualmie waterfall screensaver that would respond to the music that you were playing. And then they went on to make Cool Edit, which... they got bought out by Adobe, and it became Audition. But Cool Edit was made by these guys who made Snoqualmie screensaver. Some of the only software that I like, you know, really respect and recommend. Like, I still use Cool Edit now, and you know, I would loathe to use any other sound editor, because it's the best. For the way you can work it, and it's very quick to move bits about and stuff. Anyway, Snoqualmie. So you came from Snoqualmie. Bit of a diversion there, but I think I got away with it. But it's been a very interesting show. I don't know how everybody is checking out the thing. Anyway, so you've got this temple, which is it built on the site? Was there an old temple or sacred ground there before?
There is an Indian legend here that's really kind of strange. It's over at the local park here. It has a labyrinth in it that some local volunteers had made, and I have a little labyrinth in my yard too. It's kind of, you can't really see it, it doesn't really photograph very well, but That's just an abbreviated one anyway. But there's a really large labyrinth at the local park, and there's also a little place where it talks about an Indian legend where there was a man who, Indian man, a brave that had befriended a local dragon. And this dragon was said to be have some golden scales or something like that. And some people wanted to mess with this Indian guy, and the dragon came, and they were just totally humiliated by this whole thing. I'm not sure. I can't really remember the details, but it was. Well, the landscape here actually makes the shape of a dragon. There's a head of a dragon, and then there's these two arms that are depicted by these two islands that are there. And then it's got like this legs and everything. So the landscape even describes the waterline describes a dragon, and the Indian legend, which it's really kind of strange, and that's why it's such a local story that we all like to report it and touch it down at the park. But it's like how did these if it's some kind of dragon that befriended this Indian brave or something that made him invincible in battle.
Here's the
thing. They have airplanes? Did they know that they could they look down at this and see this dragon in the land? Which came first, the chicken or the egg?
Well, there's a lot of stories in there. I do love Indian legends because they're not legends, But what I'm feeling from that, we're talking dragon lines. Ley lines are of two characters.
Oh.
Dragon lines and tiger lines. Dragon lines are harsh energies, like almost like square or triangle waves, and tiger lines are more like sine waves. Like, so a dragon line would be like a saw wave. If you looked at it, it was a saw shape, sawtooth. And the tiger line would be more like rolling hills. So there's a difference between like mountain energy and hill energy. That makes sense?
Yeah.
So sure. Dragon line would be more charge. So if you build your temple on a dragon line and you go and sit in your insulated chamber, which would be your orgon accumulator, it would charge up your body with orgon, and yes, you would have more charge as long as you can handle it. Yeah. Do it carefully, and do it little bit by little bit. Don't do what. Whenever things go wrong, it's when they take it, they test it a little bit, and then they turn it up all the way. That always makes things go wrong. So just do it bit by bit, yeah. Because it's more like using underwater equipment. When you deep sea dive and you go down under high pressures, you can't go down straight away. You have to go down and acclimate to it and then go down a little bit more and acclimate. And that's how energy works. So if you're going to charge yourself up, just do a little bit, start with a little bit and see what effects, because you can go crazy, literally, and that's why you get these mad monks and mad because they're so highly charged that they can't relate to people anymore.
Right. Well, I have a kind of a thing in my tummy, kind of like a, people get like
excitement.
I got a bad feeling about it, but I attribute it to, the charge, but also the fact that these people that are in charge of us right now, these so-called leaders, they're just so crazy. I mean, they're bonkers.
Yeah, well, they're insane with power.
I mean, that makes me nervous.
Yeah, that is exactly this. They say, all power tends to corrupt, and absolute power absolutely corrupts. But the power, I mean, you're talking energy. Energy is power is energy, right?
Yeah.
So if you're talking about, and there you got this machine, right? You got this device that you've built, and the device charges you up with a certain energy that is a certain frequency, that has a certain consciousness, that is from a certain archetype. You're you're charging yourself up with that archetypal energy. If there is something that is opposing that energy, or that is blocking the path of that energy to ground, you will be triggered in some way into discharging whatever that blockage is. Now, if it's something that happened to you deeply, traumatically as a child, you will go through a very difficult experience. But it will be healing, and you'll be better on the other side, very much like we were talking in with Alex about, you know, edifying experiences that are pretty terrible. So,
well, you know, it's funny that this has happened to me, because I'm just turned 55, but something happened to me when I was 20. I had read this book about something called had to do with cycles, that when people had stressful situations, that were perturbed, and it went into their subconscious, and then it would outpicture in a certain cycle, according to certain cycles. It was, I forget the number now, 17.5 hours later, they would have an outpicture that would be released by the subconscious. So that when, you know, it was a self-help book. But anyway, they had this methodology for overcoming some social conditioning. And you know, we all have social conditioning. When we're kids, we're all taught not to stand on the top of the sofa and so forth. We could get hurt. So there's a certain amount of that that's necessary. But when you become a young adult, you should really just get rid of all this social, just decondition yourself from society and just become your original self and try it out for a while. Well, so I did. I did these exercises, and I did it every morning for several months. And it was just this kind of thing where I'd dance in front of a mirror and, you know, and just do this like meditation. So I went to Canada, and I forgot, I may have just not done my exercise in my meditation in the morning. So I just went to Canada just to spend a few days, get away. And I was sitting there in a motel room, and my head just opened up. There's this like, I close my eyes and I could see this hole in my head, and all this fabulous energy was just like a fountain just showering out the top of my head. And it was just so ecstatic. I couldn't believe it. So I thought, well, there's your social deconditioning, you know. That's what our true nature is, much more spiritual and much more joyful. It was just ecstatic. So I over time, I learned how to cultivate that kind of perspective. What you would say, JP, is a perspective of looking at life, and it was, it would allow this energy to shower and up and just be ecstatic. And it was really kind of embarrassing to be around people that I didn't know, because I would be just absolutely steeped in ecstasy, and I wasn't used to it. You know, I thought, you know, it was embarrassing to feel that way, and you know, in front of people, in which I had to do, you know, my job. I was, so anyway, that's what I did, is I cultivated this ability to be ecstatic at all times. And that was when I was 20, 22, I think. And so it's funny that this should all happen to me, because, 20 years later, I built this thing. But that's just kind of me. I guess it's kind of zany, you know, but it's just kind of me. It's just kind of what I've always been, kind of on the spiritual path. I mean, I've been, you know, interested in development and personal development for a long time. So, you know, the fact that there's maybe like some, you know, some of the energy around me and stuff, I think I'm probably pretty well equipped to handle it. You know, people don't bother me. They know me as the Emperor. I wear this gold helmet around with a big white French plume feather out the top. I ride bike every day and ride it, wear this helmet. I wear like uniforms and stuff, you know, kind of like you've heard of Emperor Norton or something. He was this guy that proclaimed himself emperor in San Francisco, 1861. He had his own currency in San Francisco. He was Emperor Norton I. Anyway.
Wow. But, no, this is really interesting. Yeah. Many years ago, like I said, I've been in computing a long time. And one of the things that computer people do is as well as the work that they do. Yeah, you make you test. You have to write code to test your ideas of how you know code. Sorry, I just keep banging the microphone. But one of the things you do is you write little programs and little utilities, and that's the sort of thing that you write, ideas like that, how to code. So anyway, what we did was an anagram program. So you could take somebody's name and it would just look in a dictionary for all the words and come up with all the possible anagrams of that name. And I put my name in, and it came up with Emperor Yen Jr. And I thought, yeah, I can do that. we had this alien party about 10 years ago, me and my mates. And, you know, everybody was supposed to dress as an alien. And I got some blue makeup and shaved my head. And made me up and did some eye makeup, it was blue. I was blue, but with white Egyptian type makeup, big thick on the eyes, and an Indian type bindi. And I called myself Emperor Yen of Lyra. And, so from one emperor to another, Emperor Zane where are you? Puget Sound.
Well, it sounds a bit. It sounds a little bit anarchic. Ironically, because it's
sovereignty.
It's
mate.
Not that we don't have any respect for the aristocrats.
Yeah,
it's sovereignty. Just that it's aristocracy. It's just that the aristocrats of the moment seem to be really much to be desired. And it's not as if we're all like bacchanalia and just like anything goes, anybody's an emperor and everything. It's not really like that because if you really get into the archetype, it's more, the emperor archetype is more about limitation than it is about letting anything go. I mean, that's, the energy of it is there are limits, to things for our, in our best interest, we should maybe, put limits on certain things. Like the bankers, for example. If we had that one law to rein them in.
Oh well, hang on. Here's the thing, right? And this is something I just read the other day, and I thought, oh yeah, of course. And it comes back to our conversation, Zane, right? That banks are built on ley lines, and you always have to go up three steps. How about that? And you have to apply and submit and going to the bank, you go to the manager and you make your application and he can reject you and you have no recourse. He's the ultimate decider on whether you have a business or not.
Right.
You cannot do business without the mark of the beast, can you? And so the beast is the bank, and the energy that feeds the bank are the ley lines that run in through the bank. So if you can somehow divert that energy through other short-circuited means, and the way you short-circuit something is you make current more easily flowing through one path than the other. So if, for instance, there's a mill that's got a great big mill wheel that is slowing the river down, and you divert the river and you make a nice high waterfall that has a smaller turbine that, more efficient, and, you can take the energy away from the river to make more energy for the people, kind of thing. You understand what I'm saying? On a metaphorical, energetic sort of level.
Hmm. Yeah, you're so cool, JP. Now, what a pleasure to talk to you, really. I'm glad I called.
I am simply the result of the people I have spoken with. And my inevitable blender of a mind. It's like, these juices that, they extract all the juice and then they squeeze it and they throw the pulp away And what you get on Journeys is concentrated juice with lots of ums and ahs. But I'm sure people can... basically, the ums and ahs are also encoding. You know, people might think I'm not saying anything about if I'm going, but who knows that? Who knows what is encoded when I go, or all of those things? Or making any of those other sounds that aren't apparent verbal conversation.
Well, I feel so much better. The key for me is the way you described the two different lines, the dragon and the tiger. I'm going to be thinking about that for a long time.
Okay.
Forever.
So, my friend Zane, we need to exchange books. My book is called The Old Straight Track by Alfred Watkins.
Right.
Right? It's on Scribd, I'm sure. You can find, just Google it. You might even be able to buy it. It's a proper book. It's like, I've actually got a proper book, and it's like, when you hit the pages. And what is the name of the book that you got that gave you the information that helped you break through the programming?
Well, I've looked for it on the internet, and it just doesn't exist.
Can you remember its name?
It was called Cycles. It was. Let's see, how was that spelled? It was spelled like psychic with cycles, the two words psychic and cycles together. I can't really remember how they spelled it. Cycles. It was called cycles.
I'm just Googling it. Cycles, sometimes words are as useful as a bicycle is to a fish. The Cycles Reverb Nation. There's a band called The Cycles, yes, of course. As there's probably a band called The Cyclone, spelt with a P. Electro Harmonics, Big Muff Pie. Mine was much more contemporary, it says here. It's a guitar pedal, a cycle. Interesting. I'm sure there are more... books. Let me see your books... book. That's type book. Cycles book.
No, I looked. I mean, I looked a while ago. You know, I just couldn't
published
find it.
Published in 1980, Using Your Circadian Ribbons, published by Bob's Merrill. Yeah, I don't mess about, man. I know how to Google. By Dwight H. Bulkley. Published by Bob's Merrill, Indianapolis, 1980. I'll send you the link.
Could you put that in the chat? Can you send that in the chat box?
Yeah. All right. I'm performing services. Thank you very much, brothers and sisters. Thank you, Zane. Thank you, Alex Collier. What a wonderful show. I've really enjoyed that. There you go, kids. Use circadian ribbons. Circadian ribbon. I have a circadian ribbon. It's made of pure cicada skin. All right. Love you all. Good night, everybody. Thank you very much, Zane. Good night.